So today we're looking at Dhammapada verse 291, which reads as follows. Paraduku padanena atano sukhamichati vera sangsaga sangsatho vera so na parimuchati, which means one who, by inflicting suffering on others, wishes for happiness for oneself, stuck with suffering, from suffering, such a one is never truly free. So this verse was taught to two individuals who were stuck very much to vengeance, stuck with vengeance. The story goes that once upon a time, long, long ago, long before the Buddha even, there was a young girl. And one day her parents brought her some turtle eggs. And she'd never had eggs before, and this was a surprise. And so they cooked up the eggs for her, and she was excited to try them. She tried them and was instantly addicted to the taste of eggs. And from then on, refused to eat anything but eggs, as children often are wont to do. They get stuck on these whims, no? So her parents got a hen, and every day the little girl would go out and check the hen and take whatever egg it had laid, steal it from the hen, cook it up and eat it, or have her parents cook it up, I guess, and eat it. Day in and day out, she did this, refusing to eat anything but the eggs from this hen. Now, the hen was understandably not happy with the situation and developed a grudge against the little girl. Day in and day out, seeing this strange being come and steal away her children. And the grudge grew and grew until it became a deep-seated hatred. And the hen made a vow, I guess, as in whatever way a hen can make a vow, that in the future this hen would kill and eat this little girl's children. As time went on, the hen passed away and was reborn as a cat. The little girl over time also passed away and was reborn as a hen. And based on the power of their mutual karmic attachment, the cat was residing in the house where this former girl, now hen, was born or was living. And as a cat, was able to mete out its vengeance against the hen. When the hen gave birth to baby chicks, the cat ate up all the chicks. And not just once, but again and again. Every time the hen laid the eggs, the cat was waiting. When the eggs hatched, the cat pounced and ate up all this hen's chicks. And so likewise, this hen that formerly had no sense of hatred towards the cat developed a deep-seated hatred and animosity towards the cat, fear and hatred, and and the sense of vengeance, a desire to inflict suffering on the cat, and made whatever kind of determination of the same kind to mete out vengeance on the cat. The cat passed away, the hen passed away, and again they were born in a cycle of vengeance, again and again and again. Eventually the cat was reborn as a doe, a female deer, and the hen that had formerly been the little girl, was reborn as a wild cat, a tiger or a cougar or some kind of jungle cat. And the deer gave birth, the doe gave birth to a baby deer. And from here, the wild cat, consumed by such vicious anger and animosity towards the deer, ate the baby deer also, ate the mother deer also. So directly killing the source of its hatred and animosity and sense of vengeance. And on and on and on. This continued life after life after life, back and forth. One being born as the victim, one being born as the murderer. And their hatred for each other grew and grew, and the animosity was fed life after life after life. Commentary says for hundreds of lifetimes. Eventually, one being born as a human being, somehow, even with all the horrors and hate and evil that they were performing on each other, at some point, one of them was able to be reborn as a human. The other was not so lucky and was reborn as a ogre, a yakini, a yakka, which is like a demon or an ogre, some kind of monster of some sort. And the cycle of vengeance continued. The ogre sought out the human's child. And life after life, this continued. One lifetime, the woman who became a mother was bathing in a pond outside of Sawati. And she put her baby by the side of the pool, went in to bathe in the pool. And the ogre, the monster, came up and immediately gave rise to this hatred that somehow recognized its adversary and immediately went to catch up the baby. The woman saw the ogre, the monster, picked up her baby, I guess put on her clothes, picked up the baby and ran as fast as she could out of the city, away from the city, with the monster chasing after her. She ran into Jetavana, which was the Buddha's home just outside of the city, where the Buddha was giving a talk to all the monks and the lay people from the city who had come to listen. She ran right through the gate into the assembly, saw the Buddha, ran up to the Buddha, threw her baby or dropped her baby at the Buddha's feet and said, "Please protect my child." The Buddha asked her what the problem was, and she said, "There's something terrible chasing me, and I know it wants to eat my baby somehow. I just know." But the monster wasn't able to enter Jetavana, and there's a deal with the devas guarding the gates are not, don't allow monsters into the monastery. And so the Buddha told them to let this monster in. And asked, what's going on? What's happening? What's the deal here?" And the monster explained that this was a matter of vengeance, that this woman had in past lives killed its children. And this was simply me getting back at this terrible woman who was actually a monster herself. And so, among other things, the Buddha taught this verse. He said, this isn't the way that you find freedom from vengeance. This isn't the way that you free yourself from the threat that others bring. This is an unending cycle of suffering. What we learn from this story . The first thing we learn is perspective. We all go through life with some degree of danger from various sources, from people who wish to do us harm, those that we are aware of, those that we are not yet aware of. We are under threat of harm. And we find ourselves from time to time subject to harm, subject to hatred from others. We also find ourselves consumed by hatred, holding grudges against others, clinging to the harm that they have performed to us, clinging to our hatred for them. We get easily stuck on such trivialities that are limited to this life, thinking this person did this to me, did that to me, and it consumes us. And not just with vengeance, but with all kinds of attachments. We get caught up in ambitions. We get caught up in fears. We get caught up in our worries about possessions. When our story is so much bigger than that, and the story of samsara is so much bigger than our trivial concerns in this lifetime. You think of all of the problems and difficulties and challenges that we have, that most likely we have been confronted with these challenges and these events hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and thousands and millions and uncountable times in samsara. It all starts to become a little bit trivial. It's valuable for us to remind ourselves of the infinitude of the universe. Even if you don't believe or are not convinced about your own rebirth, it doesn't really matter. I mean, it's great if you can, but even if you are only aware of this one lifetime is so trivial. You are trivial. And in the universe, in the grand scheme of things, regardless of how much of a part you play in it, why do you waste this time? Why waste this short life that you have with something that has no meaning? This person wants to kill you. This person steals from you. Someone hurts you. All of the events in our lives, all of the possessions we cling to and worry about and despair over, all of our loss and all of our gain, it's so trivial and insignificant. Stories about past lives are valuable in this way because they open the door to something greater. They give us they remind us of the infinitude of time and space, and how our concerns and our affairs are are quite meaningless, insignificant. But the second lesson, the real lesson, is in regards to vengeance. Vengeance in particular is a dangerous and absurd and problematic, you know, thing to get caught up in. We get consumed by our hatred for others. We waste our time, so much time and energy in our lives, stressing and worrying and traumatized by things that are really insignificant and meaningless. How much energy we consume dwelling on the past, how others have hurt us, how others have wronged us, how we have been hurt and abused and reviled and beaten and done wrong. And how dangerous this becomes, because of course it's habit forming. This is the lesson that we gain from these sorts of stories, the reminder that this is very real. Quite often we get caught up in these rounds of vengeance without even knowing why. We don't know why others are so acrimonious towards us, so hateful and spiteful towards us, sometimes without any reason. Whereas others are so kind and friendly and amicable towards us. Why is it that we have the friends that we do? Why is that some people seem so familiar? Why we feel so comfortable with certain people and others we just feel unable to connect and exist harmoniously and peacefully with? Because it becomes ingrained in our minds and we somehow recognize each other. We don't know how, but we immediately dislike certain people, immediately like and dislike others. It's an important lesson to remind us that there's more going on behind the scenes than simply us deciding to dislike someone and having our seemingly valid reasons for cultivating such mutual animosity. Puts things in perspective. And makes us ask ourselves whether this is really how we want to continue, whether we really want to live this cycle out lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. In general, this whole topic helps put things in perspective. Makes us ask difficult questions about what is truly meaningful. Helps us confront the hard truth that there's no value in things like vengeance or any kind of attachment to the ephemeral qualities of our existence in this lifetime. The third lesson is how these qualities of mind, like hatred, obsession, and so on, blind us. So getting perspective is valuable. It's also valuable to recognize that without development and without having a stepping back and taking time to gain a broader perspective and gain the clarity of mind that allows us to see more clearly, see things as they are, this sort of anger and on the other side, greed, the delusion involved, attachment to self, conceit, the idea that I don't deserve to be treated like this, I don't deserve this sort of suffering that others inflict upon me, and so on. These emotions blind us, prevent us from letting go. The lesson here is how dangerous our emotions are if we don't have the capacity to confront them and learn to let them go, that we can easily get caught up. If you see how easily we get caught up in these cycles of vengeance, how they rob us of our capacity to live our lives objectively and in a way that brings happiness and freedom from suffering and peace and so on. They consume us, they consume our minds, and they blind us. Without the power of mindfulness, we can see how the world goes, how much of the world is caught up in these cycles, blaming others for our problems, obsessing over our relationships with others, the good and the bad, and being pushed and pulled by greed and anger and delusion. How much horror there is in the world simply because of our sense of vengeance and entitlement to vengeance. Our sense of justice and seeking out justice, retribution, and so on and so on. It's an important reminder and a valuable lesson that makes clear the value of mindfulness, the value of seeing clearly, the value of vipassana. When we learn to appreciate the meaninglessness, the triviality of all of our attachments, realizing that our greed and our anger and delusion are not bringing us happiness, are not bringing us peace. When we just gain the clarity to see things as they are, seeing is just seeing, hearing is just hearing, and we break down all of these concepts that make up our relationships with others, the narrative of our lives, how we've been hurt, how we've been abused, how we've been treated unfairly, and so on and so on. We break them down, we see there's nothing in them. There's no meaning, no conclusion to be drawn. And this clarity is essential for freeing ourselves from these cycles, cycles of addiction, cycles of hatred, cycles of delusion, and freeing us from suffering. How easily we can get caught up. A valuable lesson. As for the verse is a simple teaching on vengeance, but it does make an important point. The verse says that it is because of our desire for happiness that we seek out vengeance, that we seek to harm others. The Buddha points out that this is what's wrong. What's wrong is that we want to find happiness by harming others. And it's when we do that, when our happiness relies on the suffering of others, we will never be free from the cycle of vengeance. This is the problem with the way in which we try to find happiness. Wanting to be happy is great. It's valuable. It's really the whole reason for religious practice of any sort, certainly of Buddhism. In Buddhism, the goal is to find happiness. And so finding happiness is not problem. The problem is simply our happiness depends on the suffering of others. There are three ways in which your happiness might depend on the suffering of others. The first is through inconsideration, thoughtlessness. Sometimes we do things that harm others, not because we intend to harm them, but simply because we don't think of the happiness of others. We don't consider it in our decision making. Like this young girl. It's scary, no? Quite innocently, this girl thinks, well, this is what you do with chickens, no? You take their eggs and you cook them. She didn't have any sense of animosity towards this hen. She wasn't thinking, I'll hurt this hen and that will make me happy. She just didn't care. Children are often like that. Children don't have, it's scary, you know, we think children are innocent. They're not really innocent. They're just kind of clueless, ignorant. Ignorant of consequences, ignorant of the nature of their acts, the full meaning behind the things that they do. And inconsiderate of others. Children are often incredibly inconsiderate until they're made aware of it. They don't realize the harm that they're inflicting on others. Certainly that was the case with this young girl, taking the eggs from this mother who was the mother of those live chick-filled eggs. But we do this. This is a common problem. This isn't something that's specific to this story. This is something that happens more often than we might think, and the very clear reason for that is because we don't think. It happens often in ways that we're not even aware of, because that's the nature of human beings. We're often quite inconsiderate. We don't think about others in our decision making. We act in a way that will make ourselves happy, ignoring or not even taking time to consider how it will harm or impact others. This is a problem. This is something that you hear Buddhists in Thailand and Sri Lanka complain about. Non-Buddhist foreigners, they'll often be amazed at how inconsiderate they can be. Now, they don't think of the suffering of others or the happiness of others when they, you know, sometimes when meditators take all of the food or all of the sweets or something like that, or when someone doesn't clean their room before they leave. I mean, I don't think it's unique to foreigners. But it's something that I think is a part of Buddhism that isn't talked about quite often, is being considerate, being thoughtful. It's a sign of someone who has mindfulness, someone who has wisdom, that they should be compassionate and caring and kind and thoughtful. We don't talk about thoughtfulness enough. In Thai, they have a word for it. I think in Sri Lanka, I don't know the word yet, but I'm sure they have a word for it. In English, it's being considerate, being thoughtful. We aren't considerate nearly enough, thoughtful nearly enough, and it's a quality that you can recognize. That being said, you do also see people being busybodies and getting overly concerned with the affairs of others. So the point here is not that we should stick our nose in other people's business. And it's also not that we should consider ourselves to be be responsible for the happiness of others. And that anything we do that inadvertently hurts other people is our fault. It's not always the case. As with all things conceptual meaning in the realm of people and relationships. This is all conceptual. It's important that we are reasonable. So it's a very valid place to apply the middle way, that we should be reasonable, that we should not take it to any extreme. We should not ignore the concerns and the complaints, the happiness and the suffering of others. But at the same time, we have to acknowledge that we aren't going to be able to please everyone all the time. Some of the things that we do might be right, even though they make other people unhappy. For example, when someone becomes a Buddhist monk or undertakes even the practice of Buddhism, that can make a non-Buddhist family quite unhappy. That doesn't by any means mean that it's the wrong thing. And this is also a problem that we find. And in that sense, it actually is true that some instances of vengeance are unavoidable, meaning sometimes the things we do might be perfectly right and absolutely valuable and worthwhile, and yet they make other people unhappy. So the Buddha, for example, when he undertook to teach and people began to follow him, there was great pushback from other religious sects who even sought to destroy the Buddha, cultivated a great amount of vengeance towards him. It's an example of how sometimes it's unavoidable, and you can't always please everyone all the time. And we are ultimately responsible for our own happiness, but our own happiness and our own suffering. But it harms us to be ignorant and deluded. It's egotistical to ignore. It's deluded and ignorant, and it shows a lack of mindfulness and a lack of cultivation for us to not think and not consider others in our actions. In general, not to consider the nature of our situation, which includes other people. We can't ignore our responsibilities towards others and so on. The second way in which we find happiness by inflicting suffering on others is intentionally, when we know that the things that we do are going to hurt others. It's not the hurting of others that makes us happy. That may even make us unhappy, but there's something about the action that we do that makes other people unhappy that will bring us pleasure. Theft is a common one. So for this young girl, it wasn't a sense, she didn't have a sense of stealing, but sometimes we know. As an adult, we know, of course, and among humans, we know that when we steal something from others, we're harming them. And, of course, this is another level of evil, a higher level of evil than simple ignorance. And this is something that very much relates to the verse that the Buddha taught. That it's of course, I mean, obviously important for those of us who seek happiness, for those wishing to gain purity and clarity and freedom from suffering, that in all ways we abandon our actions that might harm others. It's the problem with theft. I mean, it's a very obvious lesson, but still something that we find ourselves engaging in, that is a cause of so much trouble and suffering. And the point is that you can't get away with it, especially when you know that it's going to cause harm to others. There's such a great evil that you cultivate that you become completely stuck, become absolutely stuck in this cycle of vengeance. When you die, you have this crushing guilt that you have to come to terms with, that most often compels you to be born as a victim. And likewise, those you have victimized have such a sense of entitlement and self-righteousness that they, in turn, are quite often born as your tormentor, as the aggressor in a future life. And so this is how the cycle, I mean, it's incredibly oversimplified, and in most cases it's much more complicated, but still, the power of our emotions, when they are so strong as this, they compel us to enter into this cycle where we act and where we've acted in ways that have harmed others, and the guilt and the corruption of our mind, the simple pollution of the mind, leads us to be born in a way that, born in a state that leads directly to our own future suffering. But the third way in which we can cause suffering to others that we, of course, have to acknowledge and be aware of is when The suffering of others makes us happy. Which sounds quite extreme, but is, I guess, much more common than we might think. We do this without thinking. We enjoy the suffering of others. We enjoy the suffering of our enemies. We like defeating them. We're happy when we win an argument. We're happy simply because we made someone feel less than us. We're happy to prove other people wrong. We're happy to defeat. This isn't something that only comes into play with mass murderers or psychopaths. It's something that we're all guilty of from time to time. It's a part of our nature. All of these are part of our nature that is so shameful. It's unworthy of us as people seeking out true happiness and freedom from suffering. And it absolutely doesn't lead to true happiness. You can't find happiness by defeating others. It feels like you can. You know, look in the world how people gloat over their victory, gloat at their victories over others. And how angry we can become seeing other people gloat over their victories. How we can wish them such ill and be happy when they suffer. We might even be happy thinking about how when they die they will suffer in hell or such a thing. These are all unworthy thoughts, unworthy qualities. They're unworthy and unwholesome, unskillful. They're a big part of the danger that we see that leads us to want to cultivate mindfulness. We see these qualities in ourselves. This is the lesson for us. But these are the sorts of qualities that as Buddhists we talk about to recognize in ourselves, to make clear and to encourage us to practice in such a way as to be free from these qualities. And this is the value that you can see in mindfulness. And through the practice of mindfulness for yourself, you see moment after moment in your practice, the relationship change. You see your perspective on experiences change. And the clarity that you gain allows you to free yourself from the bind that gets you stuck with vengeance. As we're mindful, there's an objectivity that we're unable to find normally. Ordinarily, our minds are constantly judging, reacting, and as a result, cultivating these intense and deep-seated grudges against others, attachments to others, bonds and binds and ties to others and to objects of attachment and aversion and so on. Mindfulness changes that. It allows us to see clearly. It allows us to gain perspective and see the triviality and the meaninglessness of all of these bonds that tie us. Through mindfulness, through simply noting, reminding ourselves, this is just seeing, this is just hearing, this is just feeling. This pain I am feeling is not mine or caused by someone else. It doesn't belong to me or belong to them. It's just pain. It's such a profound and powerful practice and realization that comes from practice that it changes everything. It frees us from this incredibly powerful prison or hell that we find ourselves in at this, you know, in this moment we might find ourselves engaged in so many games, cycles of vengeance, and this frees us from it. So a valuable practice for us as meditators is to make this determination, to set ourselves in this direction, that if others have ideas of vengeance towards me, I allow them that. If others are going to hurt me, No matter what I do, I will not seek vengeance, seek revenge against them. To change our attitude towards these things, that no, this is not the solution I will seek. I will not seek to find happiness by harming others. I will not seek to feel better because I've made other people suffer, no matter what they might do to me. I will forgive and I will let go. I will break the cycle of vengeance. And I acknowledge my hatred towards others. I will not allow myself to harm others, even though I might wish it, even though I might have such anger in my mind. I will cut, I will stop this cycle in its tracks. But of course, ultimately, the only really truly important practice is that we should cultivate this clarity of mind through mindfulness. And this is the value of our practice, and this is what I hope all people who cultivate mindfulness can see through their practice. And if they can find this freedom from the cycle of vengeance and the cycle of suffering, the cycle of samsara. So that's the Dhammapada for today. Thank you for listening.